This is Bloomberg Daybreak for this Thursday, April 13th, 2017. Coming up this hour,
President Trump calls for a weaker U.S. dollar and reverses course on labeling China a currency manipulator.
Currencies in Taiwan, South Korea, and emerging markets climb, threatening export-oriented economies.
Earnings season picks up with three of the largest U.S. banks set to release results today.
President Trump says relations with Russia may be at an all-time low as relations with China warm up. I'm John Tucker. Those stories straight ahead.
I'm Rob Buschka. Ahead in sports, Rangers take a 1-0 lead north of the border. Both local baseball teams come up winners, and Carmelo Anthony may have played his final game for the Knicks.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1200 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on Bloomberg.com and via the Radio Plus mobile app.
Good morning to you. I'm Bob Moon.
And I'm Michael Barr. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
It's now 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets for you every 15 minutes throughout the trading day here on Bloomberg Radio. This morning, S&P futures are down 4 points, a little more than a tenth of 1%. Dow futures lower by 27 points. NASDAQ futures down by 7 points. In Europe, London's FTSE and the CAC in Paris are both down around 0.5%. The DAX in Frankfurt down around 0.3%. Tokyo's Nikkei closed lower by 0.2%. The Hang Seng down 0.2%. 10-year Treasury price is up 3/32. The yield at 2.2285. The 2-year yield at 1.2012. West Texas Intermediate crude is virtually unchanged at this hour at $53.09 a barrel. Brent crude virtually unchanged as well, is at $55.88. COMEX gold prices are up 0.8%, $10.40 an ounce to $12.8850. The pound trading at $1.2551. The euro at $1.0645. And the yen at $109.02.
Donald Trump is calling for a weaker dollar. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, the president said the U.S. dollar is getting too strong. Those comments swiftly rippled through currency markets during trading in Asia, with Taiwan's dollar and South Korea's won climbing nearly 1%. Still, Loomis Sales Vice Chairman Dan Fuss told Bloomberg earlier this week he thinks the dollar could remain strong amid geopolitical turmoil.
As tensions around the world increase, money flows from elsewhere into the dollar increase. And that's hard to measure, but I think it's clearly happening.
President Trump's call for a weaker dollar contrasts with his criticism of China during the campaign when he said he would label the nation a currency manipulator. He also walked back those comments in his interview with the Wall Street Journal. Bloomberg's Jenna Smilek reports from Bloomberg 99.1 Newsroom in Washington.
What Donald Trump said in this article is that China isn't a currency manipulator, and that's why he's not going to label them one. But I think at the end of the day, it also is a recognition that that would really sour diplomatic relations with the country. It would be very negative for trade relationships. And so I think that economically, it probably wasn't a good choice. I think that's probably what economists and advisors have been telling Donald Trump, and I think that we saw some sort of recognition of that from the president.
Trump's remarks about the dollar mark a departure from the practice of recent presidents who generally steered clear of commenting on the currency for fear of jolting markets. And the greenback is weaker this morning. The dollar spot index currently at 100.270.
Traders in Asia today were the first to react to President Trump's comments on the dollar. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally reports from our Hong Kong bureau.
The weaker dollar on the back of President Trump's comments strengthened the yen, which in turn weakened Japanese equities, while a number of emerging market currencies also gained ground against the dollar. The TOPIX index fell for a third session in Tokyo to hold at December lows. In Australia, an 8.5% plunge in iron ore futures weighed on the ASX 200, but the Aussie dollar jumped as employment surged three times as much as was expected in March, although Australia's unemployment rate remained at 5.9%. In Hong Kong, stocks eased, but those on the mainland were supported by data showing China's exports jumped the most in 2 years in March, and South Korean stocks and the won continued to rebound after last week's sell-off. Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak, Hong Kong.
Thanks, Juliet. Here in the U.S., the pace of earnings season picks up today with three big banks scheduled to release results. Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger has a preview.
We'll get numbers from J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo before the opening bell on Wall Street. Bloomberg Intelligence says the fixed income trading at J.P. Morgan and Citigroup will get close scrutiny. Wells Fargo's retail metrics will be in focus. Progress should track fallout from the sales misconduct that came to light at that bank last year. Stephen Auth of Federated Global Investment says the reports could set the tone for today's trading on Wall Street.
I think it is important. If they blow these numbers this week, I think it's the market goes low.
But Auth thinks the banks will probably beat forecasts. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Jeff. Wells Fargo is already in the news ahead of today's earnings report. We've learned that Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway has sold more than 7 million shares of Wells Fargo stock this week. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett has more.
Berkshire plans to divest additional shares to get below the Federal Reserve's 10% threshold for ownership in a lender without having to take on bank status. According to a statement from Berkshire, it says, quote, these sales are not being made because of investment or valuation considerations. Rather, they are solely motivated by the desire to return to a percentage ownership below the 10% notification threshold. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Charlie, thank you. At 8:30 Wall Street time this morning, the Labor Department issues data on producer prices. Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice has a preview.
The producer price index has been on the rise since September. Economists at Bloomberg Intelligence say today's report will probably reflect last month's drop in crude oil to below $50 a barrel. Also today, the Labor Department reports on jobless claims. The prior claims report registered a five-week low. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Vinny. The International Energy Agency said global oil inventories probably expanded in the first quarter. Stockpiles rose even as OPEC and its allies cut supply in the quarter. Checking prices now, West Texas Intermediate crude is trading at $53.07 a barrel, and Brent crude is trading at $55.85 a barrel. We'll dig deeper into the oil market straight ahead when we speak with Stephen Shork, president of the Shork Group.
And stay with us for world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
It's 5:07 now on Wall Street. Let's take a look at what's happening around the world and in the nation. And standing by, a good morning to John Tucker.
And good morning to you, Michael. President Donald Trump says U.S. relations with Russia may be at an all-time low as he moves even farther away from his campaign promises to establish better ties with Moscow. At a White House news conference with visiting NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, Trump said flatly, right now, we're not getting along with Russia at all. China's abstention from a UN resolution condemning the chemical attack in Syria is the most significant sign yet of warmer ties between Xi Jinping and Donald Trump after they met last week. China, which has since 2011 joined Russia to veto six UN Security Council resolutions on Syria, abstained from a vote yesterday on a U.S.-led proposal criticizing last week's chemical weapons attack. Satellite imagery has shown activity around North Korea's nuclear test site. Now, Bloomberg's David Tweed says the timing may not be all that surprising.
We know that the anniversary of Kim Il-sung is coming up on April the 15th on Saturday, and we know that often the North Koreans choose these sorts of events to do a missile test. It doesn't always happen on the day either, so it could be coming at any time, or maybe it won't. Maybe he'll surprise us and we won't have anything to react to at all.
President Trump's spokesman says reports of a major staff shakeup at the White House are overblown. Spokesman Sean Spicer says, don't believe what you hear about White House infighting. He insists Mr. Trump is not ready to split his conflicting top advisors, Steve Bannon and Jared Kushner.
The only thing that's being shaken up in Washington right now is Washington.
Reports inside the White House indicate the president ordered Bannon and Kushner to work out their differences. The spokesman says the president invites competing ideas. That video of the man being dragged off a United Express flight turned into an unwanted light, little-known police force that guards Chicago's two main airports and could threaten the agency's future. Aldermen were scheduled to grill United and the Chicago Aviation Department today about why a Kentucky physician was yanked out of his seat after he refused to get off the full jetliner at O'Hare Airport. And Charlie Murphy, older brother of Eddie Murphy and a comedy stand-up and performer in his own right, has died. He died Wednesday in New York of leukemia, according to his representative.
Murphy was 57. Global News 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Michael.
John, thank you very much. 5:09 now on Wall Street, and now with the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, here's Rob Bushka.
Good morning, Michael. What more could you ask for in the NHL postseason than an original six matchup, Rangers and Canadiens, north of the border at Bell Center? Game one goes to New York.
Grabner in on Radulov. Grabner trying to center it. Now the chance, shoot, scores! Michael Grabner, empty net goal! And the Rangers have a 2-0 lead!
Rangers TV on the call, 2-0 would stand up behind 31 saves from Henrik Lundqvist.
We had a plan going into this game, how we needed to play, and we executed it perfectly. You know, Montreal is one of the better teams in their transition games. I think a lot of games we played up here, they beat us on odd man rushes and breakaways. And today we get the early goal, and after that we play a smart game.
Tanner Glass and Michael Grabner scoring for New York as the Blue Shirts enjoy a day off Thursday. Game two is Friday. And what could be the final game in a Knicks uniform? For Carmelo Anthony, he sent the Knicks out a winner, 114-113, knocking off the Sixers at the Garden. Melo finished with 17. The long season also came to an end for the Nets, who fell by 39 in Chicago, finishing with the worst record in the league. Baseball, the Yankees doubled up the Rays 8-4 at the stadium. Brian Mitchell earned his first win. Aroldis Chapman nailing down his first save. Rays and Yankees tonight, Matt Andreese versus Luis Severino. And the Mets, they get all the love for their trio of starting pitchers, but it's Yoenis Cespedes bat coming through again in Philly. Cespedes with an RBI double. Mets win it 5-4. Cespedes now with 4 home runs, 8 RBIs just 10 days into the season. Mets now head to Miami where they open up a series tonight. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Michael?
Thanks, Rob. In other sports news, the city of St. Louis has filed a lawsuit against the NFL over the Rams' plans to relocate to Los Angeles. The city alleges the league violated its own relocation guidelines and enriched itself at the expense of the community it left behind. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Taking a look at U.S. futures, the S&P futures down almost 0.2%. The Dow futures down 0.1%. The NASDAQ futures down 0.1%. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And good morning to you once again. I'm Bob Moon at Bloomberg World Headquarters in New York with this Bloomberg Radio Business Flash brought to you by Brown University School of Professional Studies, engaging mid-career professionals with executive master's degrees in business, cybersecurity, healthcare, and technology. brown.edu/executive. Well, we get U.S. weekly jobless claims from the Labor Department today at 8:30 and the Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index at 9:45, the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment reading for April at 10 a.m. We check the markets for you every 15 minutes throughout the trading day here on Bloomberg Radio. S&P futures right now are down 4 points, almost 0.2%. Dow futures lower by 31 points. NASDAQ futures are down by 8 points. In Europe, London's FTSE and the CAC in Paris are both down around 0.5%. The DAX in Frankfurt down around 0.3%. 10-year Treasury prices up 3/32, a yield at 2.2285%. West Texas Intermediate crude is virtually unchanged at $53.11 a barrel. Brent crude also little changed at $55.90 a barrel. COMEX gold prices up 0.8% to $12.88.50 an ounce. The pound at $1.2554. The euro at $1.0645. And the yen at 109.05. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now, here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, John.
Good morning to you, Bob. President Trump says U.S. relations with Russia may be at an all-time low. This as he moves even farther away from his campaign promises to establish better ties with Moscow. Russia vetoed a Western-backed UN resolution that would have condemned the reported use of chemical weapons in a town in northern Syria. It also demanded a speedy investigation into the attack that killed nearly 90 people. President Trump appears to be distancing himself from Chief Strategist Steve Bannon, dismissively calling him a guy who works for me. The lukewarm support from the boss has Bannon's friends and advisors worried he may be out of a job soon. In Game 1 of the NHL playoffs, the Rangers, Bruins, and Sharks all win on the road.
The NBA wrapped up the regular season with the Celtics winning and getting the number one seed. The Knicks and Warriors also win. Nets and Wizards lose. And on the diamond, the Mets, Yankees, A's, Giants win. The Nationals lose. Global News 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Bob.
John, thanks very much. Well, oil extending declines for a second day. Right now, it's pretty much staying close to the center line after the International Energy Agency said global inventories probably expanded in the first quarter, even as OPEC and its allies cut supply. For more on this, we talk to Stephen Shork, who watches oil at the Shork Group and is joining us on our phone line sponsored by Spectrum Enterprise, your nationwide provider of scalable fiber network services and managed cloud solutions. Stephen Shork, good morning. So we got word today of, I think it was 104% compliance with the OPEC production cuts, and yet still,
Exactly. It's funny because these OPEC quotas are based on surveys, and surveys are essentially can be, let's say, less than forthcoming. All we have to do is look at all the surveys that we were looking at in early November to tell us who was going to be the president, and this tells you how reliable these surveys are. So 104%, kudos to OPEC. God bless. But at the end of the day, yes, there is still a tremendous amount of oil sloshing around out there. The United States here, of course, we have set a record high crude oil inventory in 7 of the last 9 weeks. So essentially, as I like to say here in the United States, you cannot swing a cat without hitting a barrel of oil. And it's not just here in the U.S. It's in a number of other market areas. And we can look at this comfortably saying, Bob, by looking at the basis and looking at some of the price in action, that yes, some oil has been taken off the market in certain reasons. But let's even look at the OPEC numbers, because OPEC provides two sets of numbers with regard to their production. Numbers that come from quote-unquote third-party or secondary sources, and numbers that come from individual countries. And in one such survey, Saudi Arabia claims to have cut production. In another survey, on that same report in OPEC, Saudi Arabia has increased production. So it is anyone's guess at this point. But what we know now, in here and now, is there is still a lot of oil in the market. When we look at the pricing, the contango, that is, prices cheaper today than they are at some point in the future. A contango, or the appearance of a contango in a market, is a sign of a market that is well supplied, that there is no concern about any sort of forthcoming imbalance between supply and demand, and hence the contango in the NYMEX and the ICE Brent crude oil futures contracts are telling us the market is not anticipating any sort of shortage in oil come this summer.
Okay, and if you heard that cat remark and you didn't like it, send your letters to Stephen Shork.
And that has nothing to do with animals.
Okay.
That has more to do with the British Navy than it has to do with animals.
Okay.
Let's just be clear there.
All right. So, Stephen, is this just going to continue for a while? I mean, we have the U.S. producers just falling in line to pick up the slack every time it seems they need to. Is there any limit to that?
Absolutely not. And this is one of my pet peeves back in November when Wall Street went all in on higher oil prices after OPEC's surprise announcement to cut production last November. And when we look at their position back in January and February, Wall Street was record long this market, to the point where they were risking more than $12 on higher prices for every $1 the bear speculator was risking. So they automatically just assumed that there was going to be no other response in the market. And, of course, we knew there was going to be a response in the market because we had already seen it, Bob. U.S. production had troughed back last summer and had been on the rise since August. So it was rising 3 to 4 months prior to the OPEC announcement. And, indeed, now U.S. producers are putting more than 500,000 barrels a day onto the market, more than they were prior to the OPEC announcement. And as you referenced the IEA report, we also had a report this week come out from the EIA that U.S. production will rise another 200,000-300,000 barrels this year, and then rise another 600,000 barrels in next year.
Okay.
So of course there was going to be that demand response, and that is hence why the U.S. is swimming in crude oil right now.
Our thanks to Stephen Shork of the Shork Group for his assessment of the oil market. He joined us on our phone line sponsored by Spectrum Enterprise, your nationwide provider of scalable fiber network services and managed cloud solutions. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. This is Bloomberg Radio.
Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Willoughby since 1898, New York City's boutique camera store for precision-crafted Hasselblad and Leica cameras, plus a full selection of GoPro action-adventure cameras. Willoughby's corner of 5th Avenue and 31st Street.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130, to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1, to Boston, Bloomberg 1200, to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960, to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Radio Plus app and Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning to you. I'm Bob Moon.
And I'm Michael Barr. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Bank earnings are in focus this morning. J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo all report quarterly results before the opening bell.
And on the subject of Wells Fargo, Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway is cutting its stake in the San Francisco-based lender to less than 10% after the Federal Reserve told the billionaire's company the remaining above that threshold would limit its ability to do business with the bank.
The dollar is weakening after President Donald Trump told the Wall Street Journal the greenback was getting too strong and that he won't brand China a currency manipulator.
And we get the latest reading on U.S. inflation this morning at 8:30 Wall Street time. The Labor Department issues data on producer prices.
In China, exports in March jumped the most in 2 years. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis has the details from our Hong Kong bureau.
Exports rose 16.4% in dollar terms. Imports gained 20.3%. Norman Chan of Oriana Private Wealth was asked if it was a weak currency or a pickup in global growth.
I would say that the export demand and also the recovering global growth is still the major growth area.
China's oil imports surged to a record and topped the United States as the biggest overseas buyer in the first quarter. The trade surplus, by the way, was $23.93 billion. Now, these big gains may not last. A customs spokesman said the pace is likely to slow in the second quarter. Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak, Hong Kong.
Brian, thank you. The International Energy Agency says global oil inventories probably increased in the first quarter, despite OPEC's near-perfect implementation of production cuts aimed at clearing the surplus. Checking oil right now, West Texas Intermediate trading at $53.11 a barrel. Brent crude, little changed at $55.91.
Delta Airlines is having second thoughts about a $14 billion agreement to buy Airbus wide-body jets. CEO Ed Bastian says the airline is reviewing the order because the signs the long-range travel market is saturated. It is a potential setback for Airbus, which wants to expand in Boeing's home market.
And let's take a forward look at the markets now. S&P futures are currently down by 6 points. That is a 0.25%. Dow futures lower by 48 points. NASDAQ futures down by 11 points. In Europe, London's FTSE is down almost 0.5%. The CAC in Paris down 0.75%. And the DAX in Frankfurt down almost 0.5%. 10-year Treasury prices are up for 30 seconds now. The yield at 2.2232. COMEX gold prices are up nearly 0.9% now to $1,288.90 an ounce. Stay with us for the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
It's 5:33 now on Wall Street. Let's take a look at what's happening around the world and here in our nation. Standing by, here is John Tucker. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Michael. Just weeks ago, President Trump was looking at a potentially historic rapprochement with Russia. But those expectations have crashed into reality amid the nasty back and forth over Syria.
We may be at an all-time low in terms of relationship with Russia.
That was the president at the White House yesterday in a news conference with a NATO secretary general. Russia vetoed a Western-backed UN resolution that would have condemned the use of chemical weapons in Syria and also demanded a speedy investigation into the attack that killed nearly 90 people. The vote on the Security Council resolution was 10 in favor. Most significantly, though, China, which has voted with Russia in the past, abstained. That's viewed as a sign of warming relations between the U.S. and Beijing. Turkey is set for a historic vote on proposed changes to its constitution on Sunday. Bloomberg's Simon Demokan has details.
58 million Turks are eligible to vote, and they'll decide whether to say yes and concentrate all executive powers in the office of Turkish President Erdogan, eliminating the role of the prime minister. Either result could signal early elections. The vote seems too close to call. The polls are neck and neck. Simon Demokan, Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, Istanbul.
An appeals court judge, who was the first African-American woman appointed to New York's highest court, has been found dead off Manhattan's west side. Police responded yesterday afternoon to the call of a body in the water. 65-year-old Sheila Abu-Salam was pronounced dead at the scene. Abu-Salam was appointed to New York's Court of Appeals by Governor Andrew Cuomo in 2013. Her cause of death not yet known. The CEO of United Airlines has issued a public apology to Dr. David Dow, the man who was violently pulled off a flight over the weekend. United is also offering passengers who were on that flight a full refund. Cell phone video of the incident went viral in what's been a publicity nightmare for the company. Dr. Dow has now hired two sets of attorneys. Meantime, angry United Airlines customers can now vent their fury at a juicy target, the chief executive officer's pocketbook. United ties about $500,000 of CEO Oscar Muniz's annual bonus to customer satisfaction questionnaires. Global news 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Michael.
John, thank you very much. 5:35 now on Wall Street. And now with the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, here's Rob Bushka.
Good morning, Michael. Rangers fans have been waiting for the Canadiens, and two goals was all they needed at Bell Center in Montreal to take a 1-0 lead with a 2-0 win. Henrik Lundqvist brilliant between the pipes, 31 saves. Coach Alain Vigneault trying to temper the enthusiasm.
All we've done so far is win one game. They, you know, they were going to come out hard. It was a physical first period. They attempted more shots. But I thought after that, our game really picked up. We managed the puck better, and we were able to spend some quality time in their end and test their team a little bit.
Thursday's an off day. Game two is Friday night. Knicks fans may have seen the last of Carmelo Anthony's career in blue and orange conclude with a 114-113 win at the Garden over Philadelphia. Anthony finished with 17. The Nets, they lost by 39 in Chicago, finishing with the worst record in the NBA, winning just 20 games. On the diamond, the Yankees have a couple of strong young hitters in the lineup.
Here is the 1-1. Swung on and into the air to center. Back goes Kiermaier. He's on the track. He's at the wall. She's gone into Monument Park. It is Judgment Day. Aaron is judge and jury.
John Sterling, Yankees radio judge, along with Gary Sanchez, who had his coming out party last September, gave New York an 8-4 win over the Rays at Yankee Stadium. Tonight, Luis Severino hosts Matt Andreese. Mets edged the Phillies 5-4 in Philadelphia. Yoenis Cespedes drove in two more. He has four home runs and eight RBIs just over a week into the season. Mets head south to Miami, where they open up a weekend set tonight. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Michael?
Rob, thank you very much. It's 5:37 now on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report. Let's check in with Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning, Ed.
You know, Michael, there may be a TV product for folks who don't want sports. People familiar with the matter say cable programmers, including Viacom, Discovery Communications, and AMC Networks, are in talks with pay TV distributors about creating new online services for people who don't want to pay for sports programming. At least one service could be introduced this year. Shares of Parsippany-based Wyndham Worldwide rose 1.5% on heavy volume after a J.P. Morgan analyst said the hospitality company could consider separating its businesses. Looks like home sales in Brooklyn jumped 46% in the first quarter, the most in about 7 years. The supply of listings hovered near a record low. A report by the appraiser Miller Samuel in brokerage Douglas Elliman Real Estate finds the number of homes on the market fell 20% to the second lowest quarter on record. The combination has sparked bidding wars. And that's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Michael.
Ed, thank you very much. The effects of Brexit are already being seen at one of London's biggest banks. HSBC says some of its largest clients are asking for their business to be routed through mainland Europe. Bloomberg's Sandra Kiloff has the story from our London bureau.
Some of HSBC's major business clients aren't waiting to see what Brexit deal the UK reaches with the EU. A small number are asking the bank to book more of their trade and foreign exchange activity through its Paris office, according to the head of global commercial banking, Noel Quinn. He says executives at multinational companies are ensuring they can continue trading whatever the outcome of negotiations, as they can't afford to wait 2 years. So far, several global banks have started arranging for some British-based operations to move to new or expanded offices inside the EU after British Prime Minister Theresa May triggered discussions to leave the bloc. Sandra Kilhoff, Bloomberg Daybreak, Copenhagen.
Sandra, thank you very much. And now let's check in with our Bloomberg affiliate radio stations to find out what commuters are hearing all around the world this morning.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that United Airlines will reimburse all passengers on a plane where a man was forcibly removed from the aircraft.
I'm Steve Podesk, and on KNX in Los Angeles, I'm talking about Disney's new animated shorts that will celebrate the iconic heroines of the Star Wars universe.
I'm Marcus Carlson on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're following a downturn in the housing market, as figures suggest the British capital is seeing its worst slump since the financial crisis.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KFAB in Omaha. Berkshire Hathaway has bowed to the Federal Reserve and is cutting its stake in Wells Fargo.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting that General Motors is stockpiling vehicles as it plans to suspend several plants for a combined 10 weeks for retooling.
And those are just some of the stories Bloomberg is reporting across the globe this morning. Coming up, we'll have Bloomberg Gadfly. And what's this about bank investors needing to play hardball with Citi? Wall Street tops executives are pressed for substantive answers to hardening questions about long-term performance. We'll have that and more coming up on Gadfly. This is Bloomberg. Taking a look at U.S. futures, the S&P futures down 0.2%, the Dow futures down 0.2%, NASDAQ futures down 0.2%. This is Bloomberg.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And good morning to you once again. I'm Bob Moon at Bloomberg World Headquarters with this Bloomberg Radio Business Flash. And we check the markets for you every 15 minutes throughout the trading day here on Bloomberg Radio. S&P futures currently down 5 points. That is 0.25%. Dow futures lower by 39 points. And NASDAQ futures are down by 9 points. In Europe, London's FTSE is down 0.5%. The CAC in Paris down 0.6%. And the DAX in Frankfurt is down 0.33%. Tokyo's Nikkei closed lower by 0.67%. The Hang Seng was down 0.2%. 10-year Treasury prices up 0.4%. The yield at 2.2249%. The 2-year yield at 1.1972. West Texas Intermediate crude is virtually unchanged at $53.10 a barrel. Brent crude also little changed at $55.91. COMEX gold prices up 0.9% to $12.89.20 an ounce. The pound trading at $1.2541. The euro at $1.0642. The yen at 108.97. And the dollar spot index at 100.290 this morning. That is a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now a check of world and national news from John Tucker. Good morning to you.
And good morning to you, Bob. China's abstention from a UN resolution condemning the chemical attack in Syria is the most significant sign yet of warmer ties between Xi Jinping and Donald Trump after they met last week. United Continental Holdings will compensate all passengers for the cost of the flight in which a man was forcibly removed by his security officers. Meantime, the passenger in question, Dr. David Gao, has hired two sets of attorneys. And the first black woman appointed to New York's highest court has been found dead on the bank of the Hudson River. Police say 65-year-old Sheila Abdus-Salam's body was found with no obvious signs of trauma yesterday afternoon, a day after she was reported missing. Governor Andrew Cuomo appointed Abdus-Salam to the state's highest court in 2013 and calls her a trailblazing jurist. Sports, game one of the NHL playoffs. The Rangers, Bruins, and Sharks all win on the road. The NBA wrapped up the regular season with the Celtics winning and getting the number one seed. Knicks and Warriors also win. Nets and Wizards lose. And on the diamond, the Mets, Yankees, A's, Giants win. The Nationals lose. Global news 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Michael.
John, thank you very much. Now it's time to check in with Bloomberg Gadfly. Gadfly is Bloomberg's global platform for fast commentary and instant analysis of pivotal financial markets and corporate news. We are joined live now by Edward Evans, Bloomberg Gadfly editor in our London bureau. Good morning, Edward. Let's start with bank investors needing to play hardball, starting with Citi.
Indeed. Wall Street's top executives should be pressed for substantive answers to hard-hitting questions about their long-term performance. Now, that's a notion being trumpeted by the well-known bank analyst Mike Mayo, never one to be shy about criticising companies he covers. And boy, does he have a point here. On Wednesday, Mayo put out some questions he wants to ask Citigroup's chairman Mike O'Neill and CEO Mike Corbett at their annual general meeting later this month. They haven't truly been held accountable for the lender's mediocre returns. Look at how the bank has been unable to meet its targeted return on tangible common equity of 10%, a goal that it's pushed back and pushed back now to 2019. Mayo's solutions include another round of restructuring, or perhaps the bank should be broken up. Another valid question is why Citi feels the need to measure its financial and share performance against European lenders like Barclays and Deutsche Bank. Well, the question is somewhat rhetorical. If the bank, it does it that way, so that Citigroup isn't placed dead last, which it would be on most metrics if you compared it with just its US rivals. Oddly enough, it removes its weaker European counterparts for compensation comparison purposes. The same, of course, can't be said for Bank of America, which, of course, in addition to reviewing its closest five US competitors, includes the performance of its worse-off European competitors, as well as similarly sized US-based companies, people like Coca-Cola and General Electric. This seems unnecessary and almost like an easy way to justify CEO Brian Moynihan's potentially outsized $20 million in annual pay. As we get into AGM season, shareholders really should feel emboldened to voice their concerns about how these companies are performing and in a way so they can get some meaningful changes. It's notable, though, that they flunked at least their first shot. If you look at Bank of New York Mellon's annual general meeting on Tuesday, Mayo notes that not one single question was asked about the custody bank's business mix or strategy. Instead, investors asked about diversity, climate change and corporate responsibility. Now, of course, investors may prefer to keep dialogue with management behind closed doors. After all, you don't want to be called an activist. But Mayo's got a point here. If investors only speak up behind closed doors, how can their executives be held accountable?
Japanese technology giant Toshiba and their slide into obscurity should worry shareholders and, more importantly, investors have to be wondering, will Toshiba even survive?
Toshiba will probably stay in business, potentially a government bailout and potentially a bid for the semiconductor unit. But a more pressing worry for a company with negative shareholder equity of $2.1 billion is a fallback into another demotion out of blue chip status and into the much less liquid section of the Tokyo Stock Exchange. This, of course, is the second section of the TSE. That means a less liquid universe of investors, devoid of exchange-traded funds and passive fund index. That means more retail investors, more stock volatility, and of course it makes it harder and costlier for the company in the future to raise funds. For a 142-year-old company, this outlook doesn't look good.
Edward Evans, thank you, sir. You can read more fast commentary and instant analysis at Bloomberg.com/gadfly or by typing GADFGO on the Bloomberg terminal.
And now time for our daily Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news. Today, Bloomberg Law hosts June Grasso and Michael Best discuss a lawsuit between Apple and Qualcomm over Qualcomm's pricing structure. They speak to Matt Larson, a litigation analyst for Bloomberg Intelligence, and Andrea Matuschen, a professor at Northeastern University.
Matt, let's start with the basics. Explain why Qualcomm is allowed to charge phone makers like Apple whether or not they use its chips and what those charges are.
Certainly. So Qualcomm's business is fairly unique. It's twofold. The first part is the chipsets. They sell chips that that go into wireless devices and basically allow the phones to communicate with radio and wireless networks. The other half of their business about a third of their business by revenue, realistically, is patent licensing. So Qualcomm invests a tremendous amount of money in doing research and development and then participates in standard-setting organizations that essentially dictate what kind of technologies are going to be put into 3G standards, 4G LTE. There are groups talking about 5G. So Qualcomm participates in these groups. It contributes the technology that it's done, that it's developed through its research programs. And then in turn, once companies start implementing those technologies, Qualcomm asks for compensation in the form of patent licensing. So it says, we'll let you use these technologies. In fact, you have to use them because they're required to communicate with other devices. And in return, you pay us licensing fees for the use of our patented tech.
So, Andrea, before we get to Qualcomm's lawsuit, that follows on the heels of a lot of litigation by Apple. So what is Apple suing Qualcomm about?
They're allegedly not getting a stream of payments back from Qualcomm in accordance with what were the previously stipulated deal terms pursuant to their agreements, which the court will undoubtedly dig into the minutiae of those contracts and will learn a lot about the nature of this relationship as the case moves forward. And so this relationship between Apple and Qualcomm also was part of the concerns that are reflected in the Federal Trade Commission's recent and activity filing against Qualcomm in California, accusing Qualcomm of anti-competitive practices in violation of Section 5 of the Fair Trade of the FTC Act as well.
That is Andrea Matushin, a professor at Northeastern University, and Matt Larson, a litigation analyst for Bloomberg Intelligence, speaking to Bloomberg Law host June Grasso and Michael Best. You can listen to Bloomberg Law weekdays at 1 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio.
Now, among the top legal stories from Bloomberg Law, the passenger who was dragged off that United Airlines flight earlier this week wants a judge to preserve evidence that could be used in a case. David Dow has asked that the airline and the city be required to preserve surveillance videos, crew lists, and other information.
The Department of Homeland Security faces a legal blitz over President Trump's travel ban. The ACLU filed 13 lawsuits demanding to see records on how the agency's field offices interpreted the ban against certain Muslim-majority nations. Federal courts have now put that ban on hold.
And that's this morning's Bloomberg Law Brief. You can find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com and BloombergBNA.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com and BloombergBNA.com for more information.
S&P futures down 6 points. Stay with us. Bloomberg Daybreak continues.
This is the Bloomberg BNA Report. Legal, tax, and compliance information from the Bloomberg 99.1 Newsroom in Washington. Here's Steve Podisk.
The federal government ran a more than $176 billion budget shortfall last month. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office had projected the deficit would be $173 billion. The proposed Republican overhaul of the Dodd-Frank Act would limit SEC access to the source code used in computer trading systems. And the EPA will publish a notice in the Federal Register today asking for input on which of its rules should be eliminated or modified. The notice specifically urges businesses, nonprofit groups, and others to comment.
Bloomberg BNA, the leader in providing news, analysis, and proprietary business data that positions legal professionals to best advise their clients. This is Bloomberg.